It's a big event for readers and authors. The Friends of the Library book sale is coming up Saturday, September 21st. It's going to keep on going through Monday, September 30th. Thousands of paperbacks, hardbacks, children's books, and other media are going to be for sale. And authors will be a part of it too, live and in person. There's going to be a table where local and regional authors can meet with fans and sell their own works. One of those authors is a writer of memoirs, nonfiction, and fiction. Karen Spears Zacharias has been featured on NPR and The New York Times. Zacharias is going to be in Chattanooga for the Friends of the Library book sale. She'll be here Thursday, August 26th. Her debut novel is called Mother of Rain. It's set in the 1940s in East Tennessee. She joins us for this segment. Karen Spears Zacharias, welcome to A Roundabout Chattanooga.
Well, thank you. I'm thrilled to be back in Chattanooga with you.
You are an author, a commentator. You've been featured on NPR. You've written for The New York Times, mostly nonfiction up until now. Your sixth book is out. It's called Mother of Rain. So is this your first novel ever?
It is. It's my first fiction ever.
And when you were growing up, you grew up in a military family. Your father was killed in Vietnam when you were a child. You've talked about that on NPR and in the New York Times, how war affects families back home. And that's one of the themes in the novel, Mother of Rain. The protagonist, Maisie, her husband goes off and fights in World War II. How does it affect Maisie in this novel when her husband goes off to fight in World War II?
Well, I have done a lot of work with what we call Gold Star families, families whose loved ones have been killed in war. And, of course, I come at it from a Vietnam perspective, but my work, my nonfiction work also led me to doing work with families from Iraq and Afghanistan. So it seems to be core to who I am as a writer. I always say I'm a writer because Vietnam made me a writer. We had to be so quiet about it. But with Maisie's story, it is, I think of it as a World War II romance or love story. But I think Maisie experiences a lot of things that people experience when their loved ones go off to war. There's, you know, kind of a isolation and motherhood by herself, and just that feeling of aloneness and that no one could understand what she was going through.
And one of the themes in the book, Maisie, the protagonist, is kind of mentally ill. She hears voices and has other mental health issues. Her husband going off to war exacerbates that. Why did you decide to choose mental illness and hearing voices as that specific way to explore what's going on with the protagonist?
That actually came from my journalism background. If you remember the case of Andrea Yates down in Texas when she killed her five children.
Oh, yes.
I was fascinated by the Andrea Yates case. I think most people were shocked by it, but I had a very close friend, a childhood friend from my days growing up in Columbus, Georgia, who experienced a mental breakdown during her third trimester of her pregnancy. It happened again 10 years later when she experienced another pregnancy and got to her third trimester. A similar mental break occurred. And I realized that the difference between my girlfriend and Andrea Yates is that my girlfriend was surrounded by a community of family and loving friends who came to her aid in that moment. And so you do enough research on Andrea Yates, you'll find out that Andrea Yates experienced a lot of isolation in that. Now, there's not very much in ways of education, educating the public in the ways of how mental breaks like these can occur in pregnancy and what the cause of them is. We often refer to it as postpartum blues, but this was far more than postpartum blues. And I wanted some way to encapsulate my girlfriend's story and put it in a book that would hopefully educate and spark the conversation about mental illness and women's health.
Your book is Southern literature, and like a lot of Southern literature, it includes really funny moments, really sad moments, some really strange moments, and a lot of regional lore, a lot of side stories. What is your connection to the Appalachians, and where are these stories you're telling coming from?
Well, in that summer after my father was killed in Vietnam, we were living in Hawkins County, Tennessee, which is my parents' hometown, and my mother took me out to a little place where my great aunt lived called Christian Dead, Tennessee. And it was actually the setting for Mother of Grain. And I picked that place because I spent a lot of time there with my great aunt still. And there was no TV, there was no technology, there was just storytelling. And my great aunt still was a wonderful storyteller. In addition to that, after I read the book about my father's death in Vietnam, a Chattanooga resident by the name of Gordon Wofford, who had by that time moved over to a place called Crossville, Tennessee, just over the hill from you. Gordon had seen my interview on Good Morning America, and he had contacted me because he had experienced sniper fire in Vietnam and had lost half his jaw and had to learn, spent 19 months at Walter Reed learning how to read, and I mean how to talk and how to eat and all of those things. Gordon had a lot of PTSD. We became fast friends in that way that, you know, you just knew it was from God or something other than yourself. And Gordon was one of the best storytellers I ever met outside of my great aunt Seal. So I actually wrote the first draft of Mother of Grain there between Chattanooga and Crossville. I interviewed a deaf woman there in Chattanooga, somebody that Gordon had known growing up, Mrs. Overall, and she had married a deaf man. And I was intrigued by the deafness because I think, you know, as we lose Appalachia, and we certainly are losing the language of Appalachia, then we develop somewhat of a cultural deafness. And I want to address those issues in a literary way.
One of the characters in this book is a Melungeon, and I think maybe a lot of the listeners will not be familiar with that term, Melungeon. So could you briefly explain what a Melungeon is?
Well, I think there's a lot of debate about what a Melungeon is, but my first experience with it is when I was growing up, my father's mother was a Lawson, and she was referred to, and her family referred to her as Black Dutch, and she had a family that lived up on Newman's Ridge outside Sneedville, Tennessee, and my uncles remember going up there as children and having even their cousins and their aunts hide because they were afraid of the newcomers coming up to the ridge, even though they were family members. As I understand it, Melungeons are a triracial group of people who were people of color living as free people. And because of the time and the region, those people of color isolate themselves, as is the case anywhere, even to this day. When people are different from the majority, they often will isolate or we isolate them. And so Melungeons were considered the other, as it were, the other group of people, the people that didn't look like the people from the mountain. And I understand that they came in from Wise County, Virginia, and immigrated into that area of Tennessee. And so there's much debate about the DNA of that, but they're basically a mixed race of people of color who were living as free people.
How does it affect this character being a Melungeon? She's also a mystic and a healer, so she's definitely kind of got that outsider vibe going on anyway.
She does, and I love her. Her name is Birdie, and she is the Melungeon in the book, and I wanted to write a character that was Melungeon because I love that kind of mythology and lore, and I live in Oregon now, and so many of the people I know have never ever heard of a Melungeon. They know nothing about it. And so this was my way of introducing them into that area of Appalachia and those people. And Birdie is a healer woman, and she also has the gift of knowing, or what I would call the gift of premonition. And as anyone who has a gift of premonition knows, just because you know something bad is going to happen doesn't mean you can stop it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the struggles that Birdie has. And in fact, I am already at work on the sequel to Mother of Grain, and the voice that carries that sequel is Birdie, the Melungeon.
Oh, wow. Because, yeah, she's a big part of this novel, but she's not really the central character. She's just involved with the central character.
Right. Right. She has a very strong relationship with Maisie.
Who are some of your favorite Southern authors?
Well, of course, this won't surprise you, I'm sure, but Flannery O'Connor.
Oh, yes.
Is one of my very favorites. I love her characterizations and you know, that sense of mysticism and sort of gothic. As Barry Hannah used to say, it's the juxtapositions of life that make the South so great for writing. So Eudora Welty, I love Barry Hannah, and also love Silas Howes from Kentucky, Ron Rash from Western North Carolina. They're all just wonderful Appalachian writers that are they write some of the best stuff. Lee Smith, who encouraged me on this book, and Amy Green, who is from Morristown, Tennessee, not very far from where I set this book. Amy has written a book called Bloodroot that was a New York Times bestseller, and she's got a new book coming out this coming year, and it's called The Long Man. And Amy is just, I had asked her to read Mother of Grain because I knew if I didn't capture the people and I didn't capture the language, because Amy lives right there, she would know.
That's always very important, to have someone who is authentic and who you can trust to really critique you.
Exactly. And everybody needs critiquing, whether they think they do or not.
Do you ever get down to the Conference on Southern Literature here in Chattanooga?
I have not been invited yet, but I would love to. And of course, you have a great tradition and history there in Chattanooga of literacy and stories. My friend Gordon grew up there in Chattanooga, and I believe with my whole heart that the reason he was a storyteller that he was is because of his upbringing there in Chattanooga. There was not a person he knew that he didn't know a story about. Gordon passed away before the book got to print, and the book is dedicated in part to him, and it's just a thrill for me to see Mother of Grain reach that point, because I have a feeling that Gordon's got his hand in this even yet.
Well, Karen Spears-Zacharias, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That's Karen Spears-Zacharias. She's going to be here in Chattanooga on Thursday, August 26th, to give a presentation and sign autographs. She'll be participating in the Friends of the Library book sale,